Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Thursday, September 8th, and this is the Eye on College Basketball podcast. I got Matt Norlander with me, and there actually was some big, huge recruiting news this week. The consensus number one player in the class of 2017, DeAndre Ayton, publicly committed to Arizona over offers from Kentucky and Kansas. Now, there aren't usually high-profile commitments that surprise even recruiting analysts, but this one clearly did. How much of that, Norlander, do you think was related to a home state advantage? Because for people who don't know, Ayton was born in the Bahamas, but he now attends high school in Arizona. How much do you think it was a home state advantage that helped Sean Miller get this done?
I got to think it was a primary factor, because you don't have a number one recruit overall in his class in basketball or football almost really ever. I mean, there's probably been instances, I just can't remember. I was trying to think of it when I was writing the Ayton newser the other night. You usually have, okay, it's probably going to be this school, but if it's not this school, then this other school will be the school. Like, there's usually an obvious choice and then a backup. Usually schools that would fall, you know, 3, 4, 5 in the order of any given number one overall recruit aren't given much of a chance. Now, I understand that.
And to your point, if you'd have asked recruiting analysts on whatever afternoon this was, Tuesday afternoon, they would have said probably Kansas, maybe Kentucky. Like, Arizona would have probably ranked third in terms of where do you think DeAndre Ayton's going to commit later on tonight.
Right. Evan Daniels did tweet after the fact that Arizona had gotten some momentum late. Listen, when basically this comes down to people talking to, family members directly connected to the player, the coaching staff recruiting them, and the AAU program associated with them. Those are usually the three outlets that are going to have the legitimate or closest info on a recruit. And so usually over
and of course the agent, who probably has already has been involved with the kid for 2 years.
That's fair.
Not to say that specifically about DeAndre Ayton, but just typically that's not far fetched.
Absolutely. I was going to kind of let that hang, but that's definitely a factor there as well. So that's for no other reason than that. The Ayton thing actually just intrigues me because I don't mind a curveball every now and then. And the other funny aspect to this that I'm so glad you hit on when you wrote your column is I definitely in the moment, I mean, I'll tell you right now, I pre-wrote a Kentucky and I pre-wrote a Kansas story on Ayton. And then he pulls out this Arizona hat and I'm like, you've got to be effing kidding me right now. Like, I cannot even believe this happened. So when that happened, I was kind of like, wow, Arizona, what an upset. This is crazy. And then, like, just stop and think. It's like, actually, no. Sean Miller kills it on the recruiting trail. He is an elite top three, top four. Really, you made the case he's a top two recruiter in college basketball, and you can bear out the stats here in a second. So this is not some massive underdog upset by any means. It's just within the framework of this specific recruitment and the fact that Kansas had been the perceived leader for so long, and then whenever Calipari gets involved, you obviously don't want to discount him. That's what, you know, briefly made this this whole deal seem like it was some huge upset, but ultimately it's not necessarily that. And I do think that Ayton being based in Arizona clearly played a huge role in Sean Miller landing the first number one overall recruit in the program's history.
So, like, that's the way I began the column. Like, yes, I was surprised because I figured it would be Kansas, and if not Kansas, Kentucky. But you take a step back, it's unsurprising that Sean Miller got a commitment from another five-star recruit, because this is what he's been doing literally better than anybody else in the country outside of John Calipari. So I went back from 2011 to 2017. Kentucky has accepted commitments from 25 five-star prospects. And that is far and away first place.
And by the way, like, it's just become the norm, but that's absolutely insane.
It is insane.
I don't even think the ratio, like, Bama dominates football recruiting. I don't even think Alabama is bringing, granted, we're talking different numbers here, GP, but I don't even think Saban is able to pull in the absolute top rated recruits at that kind of clip. Calipari has absolutely redefined success in recruiting at that level.
So that's 25. And then you got to keep in mind, like, Willie Cauley-Stein wasn't even a five-star recruit, right? So, like, okay, Kentucky's got 25 from 2011 to 2017. Arizona has 15. That's second most. It's 10 behind Kentucky, but second most in the country. And Duke has 14. Now, let me put this in context a little bit. I go from 2011 to 2017. Now, Duke so far doesn't have any commitments for, I mean, any five-star commitments from 2017, but they're going to get some. And Kentucky doesn't have any from 2017 yet, but they're going to get some. So these numbers will change. And by these numbers, I mean Arizona is ahead of Duke right now in that list from 2011 to 2017. There's a decent chance by the time we get to, you know, signing day, Duke will be ahead of Arizona there. But either way, the top three are those three. Nobody else even has double digits, as far as I could tell. I researched Kansas, North Carolina, UCLA, all the other schools that you think might have a shot at being in there, and nobody else was in double digits. I want to say Kansas had like eight, but it is Kentucky, Arizona, Duke, the top three far and away. Now, further context, though Kentucky is way ahead of everybody else from 2011 to 2017, if you go 2014, 15, 16, like really the past three recruiting classes, it's basically recruit for recruit Kentucky and Duke. Mike Krzyzewski has closed that gap significantly. There was a time frame when nobody was recruiting at the level of John Calipari. Nobody in college basketball. Now Duke is recruiting at the level of Kentucky and John Calipari. Why is that? I think the presence of I think the staff that Kay now has in place, with all due respect to the staff he had in place before, because those guys have gone on to be head coaches. It's not like they dropped out of the business. You know, Chris is now at Northwestern and Wojo is at Marquette. But I think Jeff Capel and John Shire specifically have brought some new energy into that staff. I know people in basketball, obviously Capel's recruiting record speaks for itself, but people really have a high reputation. I mean, a high opinion of John Shire. He has a really good reputation in the industry already. He's going to be a Division I head coach someday. And then the other thing, and I know Kay Flinch is at this, like he sort of pushes back on it, but like him being involved with USA Basketball to the extent that he is, like being the national team coach, like that matters. It is a massive recruiting advantage. And I don't only mean because he has access to recruits at times in the calendar that other coaches don't, although that is true, because what he'll tell you is he doesn't exploit that the way maybe somebody else would in his position. He says he doesn't exploit that, and I'll take him at his word. But just simply being able to say, I'm the guy in charge, and like if you ever want to represent our country, like even if you don't say it, it's just sort of understood. Do you really want to reject the guy who could someday determine if you get to go to the Olympics? Like, that's got to be in recruits' heads, in their parents' heads. It would be in my head. So I don't think it's a coincidence that Kay's rise within USA Basketball, him like becoming on some level the most powerful guy in basketball, I don't think it's foolish to discount what that has helped, how that has helped in recruiting. In fact, I believe it would be foolish to pretend that it hasn't helped in recruiting. But to back to the original point, like Sean Miller at Arizona is operating at an extremely high level. You could reasonably say right now Kentucky and Duke are 1 and 2 in some order in terms of recruiting right now, but Arizona's right there, and Arizona has been right there for about 6 or 7 years now.
They have, and this will, in my opinion, Miller's got a really good shot here this upcoming season, then next season. Ayton will get to campus. You know, ideally, we can get touch on that if you want to.
Sure.
I know we've hit on it on the podcast previously, but we might as well do it again with this commitment. Arizona will be good this year. I think Lauri Markkanen will end up being a breakout player, a name that fans listening to the podcast might not be too familiar with. I think he's got a good shot at being like a top 40 player in the sport. So they'll have momentum heading into next season once Ayton gets there. If he gets there, he maintains, you know, he was asked on SportsCenter by Lindsay Zarniak, you know, the questions about him bypassing college and just going immediately to the professional ranks. Now, there's some skepticism over if his transcript will end up clearing. Let's also keep in mind here, he's got time here to, I mean, if he's really behind in that regard, he's got time to make up that, specifically if we're talking about eligibility at the academic level. He said college is absolutely a must. His family says he's got to go. At the same time, there is a 0% chance he'll be anything but a one and done kind of player. But I will remind people, I wrote a story on it in April. We talked about it on the podcast in April. The weird thing with Ayton is you almost never have a top five recruit in a given class simply not recruited by a big time majority of top 10 to 15 programs. That was the case with Ayton because a lot of coaches were under the impression that college was not going to be in his future for a number of reasons. He maintains that isn't the case. And the other interesting angle here, GP, is that if he does wind up not playing at Arizona, and I'll say right now that I think he will. I will say my projection and prediction is that he does play and he will be eligible. If he isn't, I'm not going to be shocked. Don't get me wrong. And if he doesn't, by the way, he'll become the third five-star recruit over the past 8 years to commit to Arizona and never wound up having played there because Brandon Jennings was the first,
right. And
he ended up going pro. You had Terrence Ferguson, who would be a freshman. By the way, if Terrence Ferguson was on Arizona this upcoming season, they would be a national title contender, in my opinion, but he won't be there. And then if Ayton doesn't, Arizona will suddenly become the school with the reputation of landing these five-star prospects who never wind up being on campus. But I do think Ayton will wind up playing a year for Miller.
Yeah, and you know, like when he says that is the plan and his family demands it, I'll take him at his word. I just know that there was a time when Kansas was the only school recruiting him, and it wasn't because he's not awesome. Because just so we're clear, this kid is awesome. Like I love Michael Porter Jr. I've seen them both a bunch. I think Ayton is clearly the number one player in the class, and just a special talent. He's not some 7-foot dude who is great around the rim and can step away from the basket. He's also great away from the basket. And the thing I noticed, like, he shoots it, this is the term I always use, comfortably. Like, he doesn't look awkward shooting from the perimeter. He looks like he looks comfortable and he's undeniably capable. He is a great passer. That's the one thing I picked up on this summer that I didn't recognize about him previously. He's a wonderful passer, like, great vision, good enough rim protector. I mean, he's just a great prospect. Like if somebody told me he was going to have a Hall of Fame career, it wouldn't surprise me at all. Like, that he very much checks those types of boxes. So he is awesome. And yet Kansas was the only school recruiting him for a little while. And the reason is because coaches thought, for one of two reasons, he just wasn't going to be a college basketball player. Either he was going to choose not to sit out the year, go overseas, do anything other than play college basketball, or that for academic reasons, he wasn't going to be eligible to play college basketball. I always feel a little weird talking about a kid's academics. I mean, it's sort of part of the job, like, you know, this because you have to meet certain requirements to play college basketball. So we're going to end up talking about this. We've done it for years, and we'll continue to do it for years. I always feel a little weird talking about a 17-year-old's, you know, schoolwork. But like, I mean, as long as we're leveling with each other, like, Duke didn't recruit him because they just didn't think they'd get him in school. You know,
sure. Like
that's why Duke was never involved with DeAndre Ayton. Like, that's a fact. So we'll see. I'm not 100% sure that he's going to be in college. I'm not 75% sure he's going to be in college. But if he says that's what he would prefer to do at this moment, I believe him. And now we'll get to see if it actually unfolds that way. And if it doesn't, geez, poor Sean Miller, for all the reasons you just stated. He just lost Terrence Ferguson. He could lose DeAndre Ayton. But either way, they will be fine. They've been fine there for a while. So when I wrote this column the other day, and I point out that, you know, from 2011 to 2017, five-star prospects, Kentucky 25, Arizona 15, Duke 14, people immediately started going, Arizona's got 15 five-star recruits from 2011, 2017, and no Final Fours? Like, you know, at what point do people start talking about that? And on some level, I think it's unfair because, like, the NCAA tournament's a single elimination tournament of 40-minute games. Sometimes you can just get unlucky. You know, sometimes you just get unlucky and it doesn't work out for you. But that is certainly, like, hanging around Sean's neck a little bit. Like, I'll ask you, is he the best coach in America who's never been to a Final Four?
That's his reputation in the coaching fraternity. I would say that is the case. He's also a coach that got plenty of votes for when we put out the question of, you know, who's best equipped and most likely coach to next go to the NBA. He wasn't a top vote getter, but I certainly had coaches mention his name. He has had connections with USA Basketball as well. I think that is fair. He's gotten close to program itself. I don't remember the stats. I remember the last time Arizona lost in the Elite Eight. I tweeted it out, but like, they're They have a losing record in Elite Eight games, obviously, because the program hasn't been back to the Final Four since, what, 01, I think? So ever since then, I think they've lost four Elite Eight games, maybe five, and the margin of defeat is like 2 points, you know, overall. It's crazy how close they get. You know, they had that classic against Wisconsin a few years back.
And then didn't Sean also lose in overtime while at Xavier?
Yes.
In an Elite Eight to Ohio State?
I think you're right about that. Yeah, he's gotten plenty close. I will say he's got a 2 year window here, because when, you know, let's say Ayton gets there, if they don't get in the tournament, the tournament is so fickle. It really is. Like, that's just the nature of it. And coaches understand that. But if he does not get to a Final Four by, you know, March of 2018, then this will become a thing. It just will. Because at a certain point, you're allowed so much amount of recruiting success and regular season success. But if you aren't breaking through, now his job, the fans are not going to want to get rid of Sean Miller. In fact, there are probably maybe four jobs in the country that Sean would leave Arizona for, because he's made it into a really good job, and there just aren't that many options out there that would provide him with, you know, more money, better opportunity. They're out there, but I can see a situation where Miller, if the cards fall right, in regard to coaching openings that do or don't open and timing, like he could become a 20-year coach in Arizona and do well there and win multiple national championships. I think that is definitely something that is possible, and it's funny how quickly those things can change. You know, give Bill Self the example, because he wins the title in 08. If Bill Self had not done that, and if Memphis hadn't been so bad at shooting free throws and Chalmers hadn't hit some crazy, amazing all-time shot, then I think Self carries around this, you know, perhaps unwarranted stigma, but he's got the title, so it's simply not there. Like, I can definitely see a scenario where even if they'd continued to win all these Big 12 titles at Kansas under Self, if he didn't have a national title, you would still have Kansas fans all over him, because even now there are Kansas fans who feel like he is not quite doing as much. He should be making more Final Fours than he's made. But that's, you know, that's modern college athletics and the unrealistic expectations of fan bases. Having said all that, Miller is, he's going to have rosters over the next two seasons that warrant making a Final Four. He's good enough. He's talented enough. He's going to have the talent there. So keep an eye on that. But in my opinion, yes, he carries the mantle right now of the best coach in the game that has not made a final weekend in college.
Yeah, so I'm looking at it now. He did lose an Elite Eight game at Xavier. It wasn't to Ohio State.
Who was it?
Let me look. I want to say UCLA. Do you remember that at all?
I don't. Xavier made it against UCLA. No,
yeah,
I don't remember that.
We're talking 2008 NCAA tournament. So this is the year. This is the Memphis Kansas year. Chalmers for the tie, and UCLA 76-57 over Xavier. They were a three seed there. So Sean's now 0-4 in Elite Eight games, and like that's a pretty big number. That like people, that's going to be a bullet point on your, you know, next time you're in Elite, like next time Arizona's in an Elite Eight game, that's the bullet point CBS throws up on the screen, right? Sure. Sean Miller is 0-4 in Elite Eight games. But I tend to look at it from the other side, which is he's gotten to four Elite Eight games. And I just remember Billy Donovan telling me this one time in a conversation. Billy obviously went to a championship game very early in his career. And he was recruited at a high level, but, it wasn't happening in the NCAA tournament. And for five straight years, Florida made the NCAA tournament and didn't get out of the first weekend. They either lost in the round of 64 or the round of 32, five straight years. And, like, Billy very much had a reputation of great recruiter, but, like, can he get it done when, you know, even though he had already been to a championship game, it was like, great recruiter, but can he get it done in the tournament? And then, you know, he breaks through and wins a championship, then wins another one. And I just remember Billy saying, I just knew that if I kept getting in the thing and kept knocking on the door, at some point the breaks go your way. And like in Florida's first national championship, like the breaks went their way. Like I think Corey Brewer had to hit a weird shot against somebody early in the tournament to escape an upset. It just went their way. And then by the end of it, they were undeniably the best team in the country. Like, they were awesome. And then next year, preseason number one, they win the whole thing. But, like, I just remember Billy saying, hey, I got knocked out five straight years in the first round or the second round. But I just figured, just keep knocking on the door. And eventually, like, you'll get where you're trying to get to. And I think that is, like, I would bet a whole bunch of money that will be the case for Sean. Like, if you can get to four Elite Eight games, you know, by, you know, how old is he? He's not that old. He's 47.
I was going to ask. That's exactly what I would have guessed. I was going to say 47.
So you've been to four Elite Eight games by 47. And he's, like, right now, like, clearly got this thing operating at a high, high level. Like, why can't you get to four more by the age of 57? You know? So, like, and eventually you just break through. Like, he's got, I would bet five paychecks that Sean Miller will coach in a Final Four someday. That it hadn't happened yet isn't indicative of anything other than it just hadn't happened yet. He'll get there. Other coaches on that list, because I was sort of brainstorming about this, best coach to not make a Final Four, Tony Bennett?
Bennett would be probably 1A to 1B with Miller, yeah. And he's got – I mean, listen, I was sitting there in Chicago. My goodness. Virginia should have made a Final Four. That should have happened in March.
Some of the guys that I think would qualify as great coaches but haven't gotten there yet, some of it's just, I think, because of the jobs they've had. Although, like, Archie Miller got to an Elite Eight at Dayton. But, like
– he's still young. I mean, Archie –
and he's still very young. Well, like, yeah. Here's my thing with Arch. Like, and I'm not trying to push him out of Dayton, but, like, someday, I assume, Arch is going to be coaching at one of the top six or seven jobs in America. And that's what I would assume. And when he gets there, you're going to be set up to maybe take runs at Final Fours. Here's a good one that I think can, like, maybe get there, although I wouldn't necessarily bet on it. But he's undeniably a great coach, and he hasn't been in a Final Four. Dana Altman?
Yeah, I think that I mean, Oregon will still have a roster good enough this year where that he could break through.
Right.
Yes, Altman for sure. My guess, trying to think right now. I'm guessing right now of every active coach in the game, Altman has more wins of any active coach to not get to the Final Four because he's up there. He's got a lot of wins. So I think that he is at the top of that list. I might be wrong. There might be an obvious candidate that I'm missing, but I think he would be the answer to that.
Mark Few.
Yeah.
I mean, Mark Few could have a Hall of Fame career and hadn't gone to a Final Four yet.
I think he needs to get to a Final Four to get to the Hall of Fame. Not that should be the make or break, but I have a feeling that will ultimately he's going to need to get to a Final Four with Gonzaga to get to the Hall. I think one would do it because he gets to the tournament every year.
Mark Turgeon.
Turgeon, yeah. I actually thought Turgeon was going to get Maryland to a Final Four within the first 5-6 years of his tenure. That's probably not going to happen, but he's good enough to get there.
Mike Bray?
Yeah, Bray, I'm not convinced we'll get there. Now, Bray's awesome and has done a good job with Notre Dame. They actually had a long run of not having success in the tournament after having solid seasons. Bray, I'll say no. Not that he can't or won't, but if we're saying yes or no, I'll say Bray has a really good career at Notre Dame, which will basically wind up being second to Digger Phelps because Digger did so well in the 70s there. But I'll say Bray has a really awesome career and it makes a habit. He's the only former Krzyzewski assistant to beat Mike more than once, and he's done it like three or four times now. But I do not think that he will get to a Final Four.
There's a handful of guys who – like you think of them as great coaches, but they might not just have the jobs. Now, while, listen, I preface everything I'm saying by you can get to the Final Four from anywhere. You know, obviously VCU, George Mason, Butler, Georgia Tech went there under Paul Hewitt. So, like, yes, I know you can get there from anywhere, but it's certainly advantageous. It's easier to get there from, like, Arizona than it is to get there from, say, Virginia Tech. And so, like, Buzz Williams, Bruce Pearl.
I see what you're saying.
Frank Martin. Those are guys who are considered like really high-level coaches, but they just might not have the jobs that allow them to consistently give them realistic chances to get there. I guess that's the best way to put it. Like Mark Turgeon, Sean Miller, Tony Bennett, Dana Altman, Mark Few. I think those guys have the type of jobs that they're going to be able to consistently put themselves in a position to realistically – hope to get to a Final Four. I don't know that Buzz at Virginia Tech or Bruce at Auburn or Frank at South Carolina has that same caliber of job.
I think that's pretty accurate. Now, the question is, you know,
Jamie Dixon at TCU, same type of deal. Can you do it?
Yeah.
I mean, I know you can do it. You can have this one team that just comes together, but like Turgeon's going to have a team every other year that's looks like it could maybe get there. Sean's going to have a team probably every year that looks like it's going to get there. Bennett's going to have a team it looks like every year that looks like it could get there. I don't know if you can get to that kind of place at those other schools.
I think that's fair, and it's just a matter of how much success those get. Now, Jamie, you could see Jamie just – it's his alma mater, and if he – you know, TCU is good enough over the course of a 10 to 14-year span, Jamie might just do that and retire. That wouldn't necessarily surprise me. But with the other guys, you know, Buzz, I definitely don't think Virginia Tech is the last stop for Buzz, not by any chance. Frank at South Carolina – I don't know. I actually am not sure if that would be the case. Bruce, I don't think his last coaching stop will be at Auburn personally. So it's a matter of how much success they have to get to a higher job where it might be a little easier to get there consistently.
Some other guys I actually did a list this morning of like guys who haven't been to the Final Four, but like you could see them, like they're good enough to get there. Mick Cronin.
Yep.
Chris Mack, Matt Painter. Kevin Stallings, I know Vanderbilt fans hate that one, but like, Stallings is respected in the business. He is. I could see him just clicking at 1 year. Brad Underwood, you know, obviously his records at Stephen F. Austin is unbelievable. He has resources in a Big 12 school now. I could see him getting there someday. But there's a long list of like really high caliber college basketball coaches, guys who are going to make millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars, who have never been to a Final Four. And then on the other side, there's a list of like some guys who have gotten to Final Fours that you go, whoa, like how did that happen? But like, yeah. That's sort of the nature of a single elimination basketball tournament of 40-minute games. We mentioned about the Hall of Fame in terms of, does Mark Few need to get to a Final Four to get to a Hall of Fame? I think you're probably right. It would be helpful. Obviously be helpful. I think it might be the difference between him getting there and not getting there. But we can use that to segue into, you know, the Hall of Fame induction is this weekend. And Tom Izzo, the Michigan State head coach, is going to be inducted. The Naismith Memorial Hall of Fame is interesting because they induct college basketball coaches often who are still coaching college basketball, active guys. Right now, John Calipari's in, Rick Pitino is in, Mike Krzyzewski's in, Roy Williams is in. And Tom Izzo is going to be the next active guy to be inducted into the Naismith Memorial Hall of Fame. That's going to come Friday night. Gary Williams is going to induct him. And what I love about Tom's induction is that his career achievements are the reason he's in the Hall of Fame, obviously. But most people's stories, when you start talking to them about Tom Izzo, they don't really talk about the national championship that much or the Final Fours. Like, they get to those. But people just have nice and great personal Tom Izzo stories. You know, among my least favorite cliches, and you hear it all the time, is so-and-so is a great coach, but he's an even better person. Or so-and-so is a great player, but he's an even better person. And
people, I know, GP, I know you hate it. And
hate it.
People use it
all the time.
All the time.
And I just think from like a logically speaking, like Tom Izzo is one of the greatest college basketball, like forget college, one of the greatest basketball coaches on the planet. Like, is he top 5? Is he top 10? Is he top 20? I'll let anybody do their rankings. But he's one of the 20 best basketball coaches on the planet. That seems like a reasonable, safe label. For him to be one of an even better person, he'd have to be one of the top 20 humans on the planet. That doesn't make any sense to me. I think he's a great human.
Right.
But, like, is he a top 20 human on the planet?
I can't say that. I can't go there.
Because I got to put him up against my grandmother. And I like Tom, but
the Pope,
got to put him up against the Pope. You know, I'm uncomfortable doing that. And so it's always I roll my eyes every time I hear it. Oh, he's a great coach, but an even better person. No, no, no. He's a great coach and like a good person or a great coach and a great person. But like, no, he's not. If you're talking about a Hall of Fame caliber coach, there's no way that guy's a better person than he is a coach. Stop saying it. Jesus, stop saying that. So, but I do feel comfortable saying this. Like, Tom is a great coach who is a person up. Like, seemingly everybody really likes and respects, and that's a pretty cool thing. If you ever reach a point where you are undeniably awesome professionally, and also by and large, and I only like hesitate to say universally because like I don't want to speak for everybody, but like it's hard to find somebody in college basketball who is more respected and well liked than Tom Izzo. Like those are like people always say when you're lying on your deathbed, like when you're lying on your deathbed, that's got to be a pretty it's got to be a pretty terrible feeling, like you're about to die. It would be awful, right? but like if you can put that aside for a moment, the idea that you've lived a life where you've been awesome professionally and really well liked personally, like that's pretty good, right?
It is. Now, Izzo, what's so great about him is he is definitely the old school mold. Okay, now he's not Bob Knight old school and Woody Hayes old school, but like every season, there are a few shots throughout a season where cameras will catch Izzo just losing his mind on a player, but it comes from such a place of love, passion, and frustration that you can't help but like when you see Izzo like absolutely like blow a gasket, like there's a mild like comical aspect to it. It's not like Brian Kelly. It'll happen with Brian Kelly, and it's interesting how we frame coaches in different ways. But like you'll see Brian Kelly like turn purple, like a freaking Oompa Loompa on his players multiple times if you watch Notre Dame throughout a season. And we don't react to that the same way we do with Izzo when like he'll sometimes like he'll grab a player's jersey and give him just like 6 seconds of what in the ever living hell are you doing out there? And then they know it's I can't quite explain how he's been able to do this, but I do think it comes from a genuine place. I think Izzo's a great guy. His players absolutely love and respect him. He can be harsh and he can discipline and he's kicked guys out of his program. And he's definitely had, he'll tell you he's screwed up on a couple of occasions in recruiting the wrong kind of guy sometimes. He's self-deprecating. And I think that a lot of that is what builds up Izzo's image and legacy. And then of course, you know, we talk about going to the tournament and waiting on breaks. Izzo is the one. Really, Izzo, and not even Krzyzewski's not that immune to it. Like, Izzo just has an ability to, if you look at the statistics, I think 538 did this a few years back. But in terms of seed expectation, it's not that Izzo's made all these Final Fours. Like, he's made more Final Fours over the past 18 years than anyone. It's not just that. It's that when they get to the tournament, if MSU is a 3 or a 4 or in a rare year a 6 or a 7, they outperform their seed expectation more than any other program. So that also kind of builds up his legacy overall. So he is he's definitely, in my opinion, a top 5 coach in the sport. I'm personally selfishly glad that he never went to the NBA because I love covering him, love dealing with him. He shoots pretty straight, and is a fantastic guy. And by the way, he's the only college basketball figure, I guess, of living figure of note. Because here's the real quick GP. Here's the Hall of Fame class for people that might not know it. There are 4 posthumous inductees. John McClendon was an NIA college coach and won like 3 titles, so he is a college basketball affiliated figure who's getting in this year. But he's posthumous, and then. 3 other people. I got to be honest, I don't know who these people are. Zelmo Beatty. You're familiar with Zelmo, GP?
I'm very familiar with Elmo. I
don't know Zelmo. Daryl Gerritsen and Cumberland Posey. You don't get a lot of Cumberland names.
Yeah, I wonder why there wasn't a big Zelmo's World campaign.
Yeah, Zelmo is – that's – I mean, there's some serious names here.
Zelmo's World.
But the headliner –
there would have been – if he'd have played in the era of Twitter, there would have been hashtag Zelmo's World every weekend, guaranteed.
Without a doubt. I mean, Zelmo Beatty spent most of his career in the ABA, put up 17.1 points and 10.9 boards. You don't mess with Zelmo. But Izzo is overshadowed this year by Shaq and Allen Iverson, who are both getting in. Yao Ming, who is getting in. And then the other 2, Cheryl Swoops, you know, clearly one of the best female basketball players of all time, rightfully getting in. And Jerry Reinsdorf, who was, you know, the owner of the Bulls and a big figure in the heyday of the Jordan era. So there are a lot of big names getting in. And Izzo, who's this huge name in college basketball, I mean, I would say he is third, probably behind Shaq and Iverson. Now Yao Ming's a bigger figure on worldwide.
Sure.
You could make the case that Izzo is really fourth, but on home soil, I would say Izzo is a bigger factor than Ming. But no, man, it's this always sneaks up on me. By the way, GP, like I always want to. First of all, this is going to sound ridiculous, but it's true, and I'm not proud of it. So I live in Southwest Connecticut. I am 2 hours from the Basketball Hall of Fame. I have driven past the Basketball Hall of Fame without exaggeration at least 20 times in my life, and I have never been to the Basketball Hall of Fame.
You don't love basketball.
It is just there's no excuse for it. I'm a complete failure in this regard, and I've always actually wanted to cover one of these. But I don't know if it like I don't know if this weekend always falls on the first week of NFL football. I don't know. It's also in a weird like we don't think about basketball usually in the month of September, which is actually why they do it, to be honest, because the schedules usually are usually most, you know, people can be accommodated at this time of year. But eventually at one point I do want to get there and cover a Hall of Fame induction ceremony. This would have been a good year. I just I missed it.
The only thing I'm just was troubled by with this Hall of Fame class is and Devin Downey was snubbed again.
I know, man. Well, listen, you got to give it time, okay? I don't know if he's technically been retired for 5 years. Because if you're a player, you got to be retired for 5 years. Coaches can be active, which I have no issue with, by the way. Some people think the coaches should have to retire, but some coaches coach till 74 and die at 76. So they should have the they should have the ability and the experience of getting into a Hall of Fame if there's no real timeline on their retirement. What do you think about that?
I'm fine. Yeah, I'm fine with it. Like, whatever. Put, like, if you wanted to put LeBron James in the Hall of Fame right now, it'd be fine with me. Like, I don't really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't care. I'm not the guy that gets too caught up in that. But for a variety of reasons, but certainly for the reason you stated, like if a coach already has a Hall of Fame career. And he could coach until he dies. Like, why not let him enjoy that? Like, this is a special weekend for Tom Izzo. His father passed this past December. Like, what if it could have come a year earlier? Like, his dad would have got to experience that in theory. So, yeah, once you can establish a guy's already got, particularly a coach, already has a Hall of Fame career, if you want to induct him to the Hall of Fame, I got no problem with that. If you want to do a 5-year waiting period for players, that's fine because players are going to retire by 35, 38. Whatever. They'll still be in their 40s when they're able to be inducted. Shaq and Iverson being obvious examples. So I'm fine with the way they do it. I would just prefer to I just think Devin Downey should get a spot no matter what and no matter when. Did you see the columnist in South Carolina?
Oh, yeah, man.
Wrote a column saying it's time to retire Devin Downey's number at South Carolina. I can't get more behind that cause.
I couldn't get more. I mean, listen, if that happens, listen, if, first of all, it needs to happen. And when should, it does
should,
happen.
Should we go?
Not only will we go, okay, when that happens, we're going to go. We're going to do a 3-man in-person podcast with Devin Downey.
That is guaranteed. If Devin Downey's number is retired at South Carolina, I will go to the retirement ceremony and we will do a 3-man podcast with Devin Downey. Shout out to Devin Downey forever.
Forever, man. That was too good. That listen, I got to be honest. I didn't realize this was a hot topic, a burning issue, simmering on the stove there in Columbia.
I loved it. I like somebody. I must have had 15 people send me the column, and they were like, "Dude, look at this!" And I was so excited to read it. And yeah, I can't get more. Listen, if there's anything I want to happen in college basketball this year, it's Devin Downey's number to be retired. Make that happen, Frank Martin. Whoever has to make that happen at South Carolina. Make it happen. The young man deserves it.
He does. Now, before we wrap up here, just a couple quick things. I got a son, fortunately, who's still taking a nap here. So I think I got a couple minutes. Tim Tebow's going to your Mets. I mean, that's
he's going to instructional league. He's never going to be a New York Met, I don't think. But it's a fun story. Like I can't wait to do a radio.
Would you ironically wear a Tim Tebow T-shirt? Like, you know, with Tebow on the back and, you know, whatever number on the front.
I would wear it proudly. What are you talking about? Okay. Ironically, I would wear it today. Yes. I've already got my DeGrom and I've got my Syndergaard. Okay,
you can't. You're putting them in the same conversation, the same sentence. That's not. What are you doing here?
Dude, DeGrom, I will own a Tebow jersey. a Tebow New York Mets
jersey. Yeah, I like that. 100%.
I will own one of those as soon as they make them available. Can't wait for that.
Okay, so you are obviously a big Mets fan. Now the NFL starts tonight.
Let me ask you this, because I'm getting ready to do a radio show about this, and I'm fascinated because when the story breaks. First off, when the story breaks that Tim Tebow is going to play baseball, like, people just mock it. And I get if you're mocking it from the perspective of he's never going to get to the major leagues. Because, like, I think that's the safest bet you could probably make. Like, trying to be a 29-year-old who hasn't played baseball since high school and then get to the major leagues at a time when most players' skills start to decline to the extent that you have skills – like, it's never been done before, all right? So I'd bet against it here. If he were a pitcher – you know, I'd be a little more optimistic because if you've got an arm, you've got an arm. Like, you know, guys can step away from baseball for 3 years. If you've still got a live arm and a great arm, you can throw. Like, Jacob DeGrom played, I think, shortstop in college, then threw 80 innings at Stetson, and the Mets drafted him in, like, the fifth round, and now he's in the rookie of the year, and he's a frontline starter now just because, like, they noticed the arm, and they said, okay, we're going to try to make this into a pitcher. So if he had the arm I would say, okay, like, if he's hitting upper 90s, and, like, we'll see. But, you know, like, trying to hit a baseball is hard. And I'll be frankly shocked if he can ever do it at a level high enough to get him even to AAA. So I don't think he'll ever be a member of the New York Mets. So if you want to mock it from that perspective, I get it. Here's the part I don't understand. People act like he's somehow doing something wrong. Like, he's chasing publicity, he's chasing cameras, without recognizing Tim Tebow has publicity and cameras no matter what he does. Like, he played in the FedEx St. Jude Classic Pro-Am a few years ago, and there were, like, high-level, like, frontline golfers here. Rory McIlroy, people like – Tim Tebow was the biggest draw by far. People didn't care about any of the golfers. Like, it was all Tim Tebow. And this was after he had left Florida. I want to say after he had already left Denver. He was the biggest draw by – like, Urban Meyer was there. Biggest draw by a wide margin. Tim Tebow is a star no matter what he does. He doesn't need to go play minor league baseball to keep people's attention. And beyond that, from a very, like, simple place, he's a guy who is 29 years old. He's single, and he has no children, and he has lots of money. My point being, he's not obligated to give his time to any wife or partner. He's not obligated to get, you know, to, like, well, you can't go chase this dream because you got kids, man. You need to be home with your kids. Like, he's tied to nothing, and he doesn't have to work a real job to pay his bills because he's worth millions of dollars already. If you're worth millions of dollars already, in other words, you don't need to earn a real paycheck right now, and your time's not obligated to any other person on this planet. You're unmarried without children. What's the, like, why not chase your dreams? Like, what is the problem with that?
I personally don't have an issue with it, but I think people have a problem with it because he's so transparently, clearly doesn't, he's not trying this at 22, 23. He's trying it more than a decade removed from high school baseball, where he didn't even play as a senior. And people know that he has to know that the odds are just so minuscule. You combine that with the fact that his pro day, coincided with a new huge sponsorship from Adidas, so people have some cynicism there. Apparently he has a book coming out in a couple of months, and so this could all be just ways of ramping up his, like, don't get me wrong, Tebow is a star, and no matter what, like, people are gonna care what he does, but there has undeniably been a huge uptick in the national discussion and recognition of Tim Tebow than if he had just remained an analyst on the SEC network. We've talked about him more. So this, like, there's no way this doesn't have a huge impact on book sales. Adidas got a little bit of a bump. Granted, there some of it was negative given how people just so clearly saw through that. So I think that's why people have an issue with it. There's no way Tim Tebow's not a dumb guy. Like, right. There's no way he realizes, like, even if he wants to do this, like, he knows what he's up against there. And if he wants to go slum it out in the minors for 3 years, like, he can do that. But people have also brought up, and I think this is a valid case, like, for so long, Tim Tebow said, like, you know, football is my first love. And he still maintains that it is. But he didn't love it enough to say, okay, I'll suck it up. I won't play QB anymore. Because there are plenty of reputable NFL people that say if Tim Tebow, like, really loved football. He is athletic enough where he could make it as a fullback, perhaps as a tight end. Like he, you could find ways to use him on an NFL team, or he could simply give it a go in Canada and try that as well. He simply refused to do that. So there is, I think, a stubborn angle to it. And I can't believe that I'm actually engaging in a Tim Tebow topic on this podcast. Because I'll be honest, like now that I'm talking about it, I guess it's fine. But I, at a certain point, there is so much Tebow content that I just kind of have blocked it out because it's just been like it's been a thing now.
Right.
GP, this has been a long time. Like, well, I actually enjoyed Tebow at Florida and thought he was interesting. And I thought, OK, we'll see what he does in the NFL. But this has become like this bizarre thing in American sports culture where people just love to debate about Tim Tebow. And I got to be honest, like on a personal level, like I kind of find the dude boring. I don't quite get his massive appeal. I understand it, but I don't quite get it, I guess.
Well, I think I could tap into that a little bit. Well, first off, to your initial point, he's 29 years old. He's been a star since he was 18 years old. It's been more than a decade that Tim Tebow has been a thing in this country. All right?
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
More, okay. I think where the – how this stardom emerges is you had people constantly pulling from total extremes. One is you had people who – couldn't wait to tell you how he was overrated and never going to be a pro quarterback. Like that conversation started when he was in college. Yeah, like, but he'll never be a pro quarterback. He's a system guy. Can't play in the NFL. Boom, 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 boom. Then he played in the NFL. And like people forget this, but like he did win a playoff game. Threw for 300 yards and won a playoff game. And people immediately go that the other side of it want to go, see, you were wrong. And they want to scream in that direction. And then he... You know, they sign Peyton Manning. He gets released. He can't ever play. It never happens anywhere else. So then that other crowd, the initial crowd, wants to start yelling, see, you guys were idiots. Here's your Tebow. He can't play, just like I told you the whole time. And then you add in the religious aspect of it. Because, like, he really has – I think that following is rooted in – the intense following is rooted in, like, he's a very visible and public Christian who isn't afraid to share his beliefs and people who have really latched onto that. He is massive in the Christian community. I would say one of the most biggest figures in the Christian community in this country. And so you combine all that stuff and put it in a pot, mix it up. What you get is a decade of Tim Tebow fights. We've really been fighting about Tim Tebow, forever. So here we are again. Like we are on the start. Today is the opening day of the NFL season, and the biggest story is Tim Tebow. Think about that. Think about that. That's where we're at right now. And I will say, everything you said about why people might be turned off by, I accept all of it. You're right on every bit of it. I guess I would just counter it by saying, I believe his desire to do this is rooted in a sincere place. I think he really just wants to try to do this. I
would agree, but I think he just knows the game. There's just no way there isn't a certain level of marketing and vanity to it as well.
And I
think you can have two of those things at the same time.
And I will say this, if you want to add into the like sort of roll your eyes aspect of it, he signed with the New York Mets, who employ Yoenis Cespedes. They have the same agent. Cespedes and Tebow have the same agent. Now, for people who don't follow this stuff very closely, Cespedes is like the star in the middle of the Mets lineup. Like he is the reason they're probably about to, you know, get a wild card berth. He's the reason they went to the World Series last year. And he signed a 3-year, $75 million contract last offseason, but he can opt out after every year. So if you wanted to be cynical, you could say CAA, you know, like sort of with a wink to the New York Mets, take care of our guy here. Give him a chance. We don't need any promises. Just give him a chance, a real chance, and we can help you when it's Cespedes' time to decide whether to opt out or not. Maybe he won't opt out. If you do us a favor here, maybe we could do you a favor down the road. Like that stuff. I'm not saying that's what happened here, but like they do share the same agent, and people who share the same agents, like this stuff. Like the big story in basketball was Tristan Thompson and LeBron James. Like share the same agent, and so LeBron would hold out until Tristan got what he wanted, and it was just sort of understood. Take care of Tristan, and we'll, you know, then you don't have to worry about LeBron and all that stuff. This stuff goes on all the time. I'm not saying it went on here, but that is something else that Certainly, if you wanted to roll your eyes at the whole thing, you could. But either way, I'm down with it. Tim Tebow, go to the major leagues, as far as I'm concerned. Although, I would bet everything I own against it, if only because I would bet against every 29-year-old on the planet who's never, who hasn't played basketball since, I mean, baseball since his junior high school. I bet against them making it blindly.
Yeah. All right. We got to wrap up. I'm gonna bring listeners into my world here. So my son is definitely awake now. I'm upstairs, and he was sleeping downstairs on this. We got this thing called a Dock-a-Tot, which is pretty good, but he can crawl. He can practically walk now. So about 2 minutes ago, as you're going through your Tebow thing, I hear this weird noise, and I'm like, what is that noise? And I'm like, is someone doing something outside? No, what it is our dog's aluminum water bowl perish. So we put up this gate to block our kitchen so we can't crawl in there. But he loves going in the kitchen. He just loves playing the crawl in the kitchen because he knows he's not supposed to go in there. But I've got to tell you, it's got to be 50. I put the water bottle down for my dog before we did this thing because, you know, she might be thirsty or whatever. And I forgot to put the gate up. He has crawled in and knocked over that water bowl. I mean, he's probably soaking wet right now. There's water all over my kitchen floor. This is this has happened at least 15 times in the past 2 months. Like, it keeps happening. I keep forgetting, or my wife keeps forgetting, if we're going to keep the gate open, we got to put the water bowl off the floor. Like, I can hear him knocking around that bowl right now.
Oh, no.
So this is an amazing way to wrap up the podcast. I'm going to go have to take care of him before we upload it. It just keeps – I mean, you've got children. People listening with kids know it. Like, there's just – it's a mistake that I – it's Groundhog Day. I keep doing this. I can't believe this happened again right now.
All right. Well, listen, you go take care of that, and I'm going to – I don't know. Go do something other than mess around.
Try not to have you lose your phone again or something like that.
Okay? That's I found my phone, by the way.
Oh, of course you did.
No.
Where was it?
This is so ridiculous. I'm embarrassed to even say it. Under the couch cushion.
How do you not even find it there, Parrish?
Well, that's the thing. Like, that's the first place you're supposed to look. That's the first place everybody tells you to look. Like, just look under the – did you check the couch cushions? I was like, it never occurred to me to check the couch cushions, which is just ridiculous, right?
This dude loses his phone.
And of course, 4 days,
orders a new phone. Of course you did.
I found it the day after my new phone came in, and it was under the couch cushions. I blame our house cleaner a little bit.
Don't go there.
Yeah, and here's
why. Zero sympathy from any reader right now when you drop the words, I blame our house cleaner.
Listen, because first off, clean underneath the cushions, all right? But beyond that, so she came here. The day after I lost my phone, and I said, hey, listen, if you just see my phone anywhere, could you just, like, be on the lookout for it? Because I can't find it anywhere. And I swear to God, she said these words exactly. When I get into the den, I'll make sure to look under the cushions. And then my wife found it 3 days later under the cushions in the den. That means she did not look under the cushions. She lied to me, Norlander. Okay. I got a lying – you think you got problems. I've got a lying house cleaner.
All right, he's like, he's throwing this bowl around my kitchen.
Go!
Oh,
I,
my gosh. All right.
Remember, subscribe to the Ion College Basketball Podcast on iTunes. It's the best way to get the latest episodes as quickly as possible after Norlander cleans up water bowls. Do that. Thank you for listening. Talk to you again next week. Till then, take care. Bye-bye.